Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, and back to the Human Technology Podcast. Those of you that are listening to this podcast for a longer time will know that I make a few weeks summer break, and I make also a few weeks of a winter slash Christmas slash New Year's break. And so this is the last episode before the summer break of 2025. So I plan to return probably late September with a fresh, some fresh rounds of podcasts. And until then, my recommendation is if you have not heard all the past episodes, feel free. They're all available on the web pages and in the apps of the respective publishing companies like Spotify, like Deezer, Apple Podcast, YouTube. So feel free to get back to the old episodes. For this final episode, a little bit of a heavy kind of thing. It is about what we see, the merging of humans and technologies. The limits between the two are getting more and more transparent. You can pass these the borders between the two, and so I will talk about autonomous systems, artificial organs, brain-computer interfaces. So three technologies and three more or less related promises. So more like more independence, more efficiency, and more quality of life. And the question here is this true? And these technologies are not only changing what we do, but also how we see ourselves, our bodies, and first of all, our relationship with technology. So we're going to take a journey through the technical frontiers of modern human-technology interaction. And there will be three things I want to talk about. Number one, brain-computer interfaces. Reading and influencing thoughts? Number two is artificial organs and AI-based prosthetics, which is then the way to become a cyborg. And number three, autonomy. In general, autonomous driving is a big thing, but we have more parts where autonomous technology is present, is in our lives, is becoming more and more important. Basically, where the idea is the sentence, no HMI is the best HMI realistic. Not so much whether it's true or not, but it is about, is it realistic that we will have no HMI even in autonomous systems? So in all these technologies, the question arises, how much machine can a human be and how human must the machine become? And not human by its core sense, but like human in its behavior. And how far can, should, and may humans and technology merge? That for me is the biggest question. Should we allow this? Should we force this? Or should we try to avoid it as much as we can. Let's start with number one, brain-computer interfaces, BCI. The thought interface. Some believe it's a revolution in human-machine interaction. So it has been considered science fiction over a long, long time. Brain-computer interfaces are now coming within reach. I'm aware of the very first experimental activities at universities. It was about 20 years ago. And I'm aware of a very few industrial, automotive industry research activities a couple of years ago. My feeling is it's progressing very, very slowly, but it is coming. I can see it coming. And brain-computer interfaces mean they enable the direct communication between the human brain on one side and machines on the other side. So no movements, no speech, no traditional input methods. And this is the idea behind this. And it started as a hopeful solution for medical cases. And since if that is possible to have people with a lock-in syndrome getting back into communication, it may turn into a new stage of human-machine interaction. And unlike conventional HMIs, human-machine interfaces that rely on touch or speech or gestures, brain-computer interfaces connect human consciousness directly with machines. And maybe the most intuitive interface that we know. I think a thought, and the machine knows what I think and then acts respectively. Let's make a step backwards, take a step back. What are brain-computer interfaces? They record, interpret, and translate brain activity into digital commands. Most of them use electroencephalography, EEGs, which is measuring voltage fluctuations via electrodes on the scalp. You may have had a doctor's exam that used that every now and then if they think that that you may have a neurological disorder, and you get some like a cap on top and it has about a dozen or two dozen electrodes on it and tons of cables, and they put this on your head and connect this to a machine, and then they can see your brain waves working. This is the traditional method how they do this, and the latest developments go further, and they have implantable systems, chips you can implant into human brains, offering more precise signals, that is clear, but also higher risk if you have a surgery on somebody's brain and putting some chips, some electronics into the brain and connecting that to your neuronal system. You may imagine that there is a higher risk in this. The technology, as said, originated in medicine, helping paralyzed patients to communicate or operate simple devices. We have this lock-in syndrome that people are awake but are not able to move a single muscle. So they cannot speak, they cannot make gestures, they cannot do anything, they just lie there. And for those people, it is, of course, a big release if they can get back into the world by being able to communicate with their thoughts, can control certain technologies, and communicate and control devices. We have startups like Neuralink, BlackRock, NeurTech, Synchron, NextMind. They're developing wearable or implantable systems for everyday and industrial use, so that we as humans have a constant connection out of our brains into technologies. And then After that, you have an AI-powered signal processing, which, due to the complexity of the signals and everything you have, it is key in the entire technology. So modern algorithms can decode even weak and noisy signals, which makes it much, which gives you much better results on brain-computer interfaces. In automotive, PCIs are still in an experimental phase. First prototypes are being tested by research institutes and OEMs. Was 3 or 4 years ago at the CES in Las Vegas when I saw an exhibit at the booth of Nissan. They had a brain-computer interface, very early research prototype on the booth. I got the chance to talk to the guy that is responsible for this. He, of course, was super proud and super positive on what's going on. I found it cool that it works, and basically, yes, a good one, but research work. Definitely still research work. Let's have a look at the use cases. We talked about automotive. We talked about medicine. Another use case is gaming and virtual reality to create immersive environments where users are really in, they're part of that, and that these environments react to the mental states of the user. So if I am angry and the game knows it, that I am angry, then maybe the other persons in this virtual reality, in this game that I'm playing, are reacting to me as they would react to an angry person, opposed to a happy person or a relaxed person. Yeah, so these are ideas that exist, or the control of the game through brain waves, through thinking, hey, move to the right at the next junction, and then the car turns right at the next junction, things like this. Aviation and military, I'm not an expert in all the military research that is going on, and most of that is highly confidential, but things I've heard tell me that brain-controlled systems are already under trial, with the idea that you have a faster reaction time, that you have a direct reaction if you're in a combat situation, that the soldiers have the chance to react faster than their opponents to get an advantage out of this. Workplace productivity, so controlling software-based systems, AI-based systems, computer systems, using thoughts. You can have this, for example, in design. Yeah, if you say, okay, I want to have a screen design for an app, and then I say, okay, I need another button here, and I think, hey, I need another button here, and then the system adds a button, and then I think, okay, this button needs to have a name, and then this button gets the respective name, and so on, or things like logistics tasks, production, productivity, production places. All this seems to be possible. It is futuristic, but since we are on the way towards brain-computer interfaces, it's definitely worth thinking and talking about this one. The entire thing, the entire technology, of course, has deeply ethical, legal, and social implications. In general, the closer a technology is to the brain or to the consciousness, the more sensitive the questions become. We are not on some on the skin of a person. We're not even in the body of the person. We are in the consciousness of a person. We are in the thoughts, in the brain, in our most inner that we have. And this makes it very sensitive. Things like mental privacy, like freedom. If machines can read brain signals, how do we protect the last refuge of autonomy? Yeah, there is a German song saying the thoughts are free. Die Gedanken sind frei. And suddenly, The thoughts are not free anymore. It's not my private thing if somebody can read it, if a machine can read out what I am thinking. Yeah, and we have the same questions like with data security. Who stores brain data? Where is it? Who controls it? How is abuse prevented off my brain data? And in a world where we have more and more countries that are moving away from liberal democracy, who knows? Maybe they try to control the thoughts, trying to find out what I think. And then we are at George Orwell's 1984 pretty soon. Another question is manipulation and feedback channels. So if something works one way, there is a certain chance that it also works vice versa, the other way, backwards. So could brain-computer interfaces not only read, but write, meaning stimulating thoughts or emotions? And that would then lead to, from my point of view, a horror scenario that we have technology controlling humans, or that we have humans controlling humans through their thoughts, through controlling their emotions. And if I have this backward channel, then I control the thoughts and I control the emotions, that people may like it that somebody else controls my thoughts or not even realize that. Yeah, so there is an enormous danger of manipulation and of the feedback channels. Another one that will come up as well is transparency and trust. Brain-computer interfaces must remain explainable. So a black box kind of interface, a black box AI, interpreting our thoughts would raise serious concerns. So I have to know what's going on. I have to know what's happening with my data. And I have to create trust that everything runs well. So, to bring it down to the point, brain-computer interfaces are nearing a real-world application. They are proven in medicine. They're emerging into gaming, promising for a safer, more adaptive automotive interfaces. All that is the perspective, the positive side we see. They challenge us with a social maturity test. What is the identity? What is my personal identity when my thoughts become readable? Who am I at the very end of the day? And connected to that, how do we build trust in the machines that somehow act on our minds rather than on our commands? So if my thoughts steer a machine, that is a totally different thing than when my words or my button presses steer a machine. So the brain-computer interface is not just a new control mechanism. It's definitely the start of a new relationship between humans and machines. And we have to think it. We have to design it. And we have to do this. And at the end, it may empower us or it may threat us. Let's move on to the second, artificial organs and AI-driven prosthetics. So humans as part of a technological evolution. So the question here is, what happens when machines don't just assist us externally, but take over internal functions in our biological systems, or take over systems that our biological systems can no longer perform? That started in biomedical labs as an emergency solution, for example, with to replace a heart or a kidney or a liver of people that where these organs don't work anymore. Now it gets more a field with far-reaching ethical and societal consequences. So we have a look at current developments, at the future potential, and the role of human-machine interaction in this deeply personal context. So what is it? Artificial organs Are the mechanical or biotechnological systems replacing vital organs like the heart, the lung, or the kidney? So we have pacemakers in our hearts. In some cases, we have pumps that replace the heart after it was maybe destroyed in a heart attack. Yeah, we have artificial lungs. We have artificial kidneys. Today, most of these devices are external. So if your kidneys don't work anymore, you have to go to a dialysis. And that is basically an artificial kidney that replaces your internal kidney that doesn't work properly anymore. Yeah, we have mechanical constructions to biohybrid solutions, or the latest trend is 3D printed organs using the patient's own cells, which then allows an easier integration into the body. The problems you usually get when you have a foreign organ, that it is refused by your body, that is not existing or is a far lower level. If you use the patient's own cells and 3D print a new heart or a new kidney or a new liver. AI-powered prosthetics are something different. They're combining sensors, actuators, and AI learning algorithms to adapt to user movements, intention, context. So if we're losing a limb, or some people are born without a certain limb, then you get an artificial limb, then prosthetic. And if that is AI-driven, it makes it far more efficient, easier to use. You have a more natural way of walking. And and then as an add-on to this, or one step further, is then we do not replace something, but if we add on to existing limbs with, for example, an exoskeleton, that you have more power, more precision, more range in whatever aspect if you use this artificial exoskeleton. So at the end, we have intelligent adaptive extensions of the human body. What is the state of the art? What is the status? The artificial hearts are in clinical testing as temporary support for transplant patients. Portable or implantable artificial kidneys aim to replace traditional dialysis. If you are a patient that needs dialysis, you have a very strict plan. You need to show up twice a week at a doctor's place or at a hospital. They connect you to the machine for an hour, more or less. And then, your blood is cleaned, it's washed, and then you can go home and you're totally exhausted. Things like traveling, working is all not possible anymore, because you're strictly connected to this dialysis plan that you have. And having that in a portable way, or even implantable artificial kidneys, that would release the pressure on millions of people. Yeah, and the same with the liver. The bioartificial liver support systems are in trials for acute failure. Pretty much the same situation in artificial intelligence prosthetics. Modern limbs prosthesis use EMG, electromyographical signals, which is basically the muscle tension. So if you put electrodes on a certain muscle and you put some tension on this muscle, then it will release some electrical signal, and you can measure this and then use this. And one step further is, it's not the muscle where you get the signal, but it's the neural input, which then is already maybe very close to the brain-computer interface, but you can also use the neurons that steer the muscles. And machine learning allows prosthetics to adapt to specific ways of walking, behavior patterns. Some systems predict user intention in milliseconds, reacting faster than conscious action to make it safer. If, for example, with an artificial leg, which is AI controlled. I stumble. AI will allow me to get back to balance much faster and much safer. Beyond the machine, beyond the medicine, not the machine, beyond medicine, what are other use cases? Workforce integration, helping physically impaired users to access new jobs or to improve existing workers. Say, okay, I have a certain person here that needs to lift, 200 kilograms. And if I have an exoskeleton that helps me doing this, I will not need any other device to lift these 200 kilograms. This would be workforce integration. Augmentation enhancement, pretty controversial. Prosthetics, as I said, with an exoskeleton, not as a replacement, but as an upgrade. You can get more strength, better senses, increased endurance. All this is possible if you use artificial limbs. Again, what are the ethical, moral, societal questions we're having here? The first one is autonomy. If we have to our limbs attached artificial intelligence, how much control does the user retain over an evolving learning system? I mean, well, this problem is what we're always having in all contexts, but with these prosthetics and exoskeletons, the artificial limbs we have to ask this question again. Transparencies. How systems must be explainable, especially when vital functions are involved. How does my artificial kidney work? Is it AI driven? What does it learn? Maybe it learns the wrong thing. Then I have a pretty serious problem. Surveillance, data security. Who can access data from implants and prosthetics? Who can use it? Is it for the person only? Is it for the doctors? Is it for everyone? And of course, if we use all the data and teach the algorithms with that, learning will be much faster and much better. But who assures that my private data remains private? And that leads directly to the next point, the social acceptance. Tech-enhanced individuals face either admiration or stigma. So how will the people seen, humans seen, when they obviously have enhanced capabilities because they use a certain technology? Does this mean they are more than human? What does it mean to be a different human, an enhanced human, a cyborg kind of personality? The last point is accessibility. Who gets access to these technologies? They will be expensive in the first place. It will be very low numbers in the beginning. And the highest number of people that lost limbs in wars on mines, for example, are living in Africa and South America. I know from a project from a colleague of mine. He is volunteering in a 3D printing service for prosthetics for children in South America. I think it was in Cambodia, as in Asia. In a South American country, and I think it was Ecuador. And there are, it was Colombia, because it was Medellin, the drug town. In Medellin, in South America, he is running this project, this workshop, where children get 3D printed prostheses. And this is very basic stuff. And I donated 1,500 euros to them. And he was so super happy because he said that will change the entire project. But that is comparable cheap. And then this is what they can get. And then this is improving the life of many, many children, because suddenly they can walk again, they can grab again, and they're not incomplete anymore. But how will it be when something like this doesn't cost a few, maybe $100 or maybe $80 for prosthetics, but like, a million? Yeah. Who can afford it? Who can have it? A glimpse into the future. Artificial organs and smart prosthetics are ushering a new tech-driven area. not technology for humans, but technology within humans. Now, this is the next step. At the moment, we have a lot of technology we carry around in our pockets, in our briefcases, on our skin. But the next step then will be being within humans, and not only a pacemaker, which is a traditional technology within humans, but even more. Now, biological and digital intelligence are merging. That reflects back to the brain-computer interface. Well, we are getting closer to each other. So cyborgs at the very end of the day are not longer science fiction. These technologies signal a shift from separation to hybridization. So merging humans and machines. So we have this differentiation. We have a human-machine interface. So there's an interface between humans and machines. In the future, this may not be the case anymore. So we have a merging between two of them, and we'll end up with hybrids of biological intelligence and artificial intelligence, of human biological muscles and artificial limbs. Yeah, so we get these hybrids out of this. And the challenges are significant, but also are the opportunities. So again, we have huge opportunities in this, particularly for people with disabilities, for medicine, for society. But we'll also have ethical questions we have not yet found any answers for. So we're not replacing humans with this, but we're expanding it. And that may be the true revolution with all the problems and all the dangers included. Number three of today, autonomous technologies. When machines decide what we still need to say. Autonomous technology is on the rise. We have self-driving cars, we have driverless trains, we have warehouse robots, we have smart factories. And the vision behind all these autonomous machines is 24/7 operation, no fatigue, no errors, no vacation, no sick leaves. But that is the vision we have. At the end, that is the question, how autonomous is autonomous really? And what happens to the human-machine interaction when there is no human in the loop anymore constantly? A couple of use cases, where do we have it? Autonomous driving, that is the one that is discussed very much at the moment. We are having OEMs working on level 2 or 3 autonomy, basically meaning lateral and longitudinal control of the car is done by the machine. On level 2-3, it is allowed for the human to pull him or herself out of the control loop and let the car alone for a certain amount of time in certain situations, up to certain speeds and so on. These are technical problems that will be solved. Companies like Waymo or Cruise are testing driverless taxis. That is then level 4 plus, maybe even somewhere like 5. They are driving in American cities, they are driving there, and they're having problems, but they're improving. For me, it will happen in a foreseeable time frame. I won't see a fully autonomous car driving from Berlin to my home in Mallorca, but a taxi ride in Austin, in Las Vegas, in San Francisco, that will be possible. Or is already possible and will be even more possible and more normal in the near future. Big challenge in traffic is unstructured environments. We have human behavior. We have complicated road scenarios. Particularly human behavior is hard to predict. So I'm volunteering in reviewing articles for a scientific magazine on transportation. And I had 3 or 4 articles on trajectories of humans in life and how to predict them. How do humans move in real traffic? And can we predict it in a way? Can we have a trajectory on this one? And I had a couple of articles on this one, and There is some progress in there, but there's still more open questions than solutions. Much easier in trains, autonomous trains. They have fixed track, they have predictable stops. So it is a much cleaner and less complex environment. And cities like Paris, Dubai, London, and I think even Nuremberg in Germany, they have driverless subways operating in their cities. And that is happening. So sure, we will have emergency scenarios. We have human communication will be still required in certain use cases. And we need an HMI for this. But this basically works. Autonomous robots, some of them already use them. So like mown lowers, automated robots mowing the lawn, or sweeping the floors, yeah, vacuum cleaners. They're active. They're there. And when I was in Las Vegas in January, I was at a restaurant and my breakfast was served by a rolling robot. Yeah, the waiter came to me, she took my order, and then she disappeared. And then the robot came with a plate with my eggs and pancakes on it. And then the waiter had to come and give me the plate. But at least the way from the kitchen to my table was driven by an autonomous robot. Smart factories, big deal at the moment where autonomy becomes reality. Industry 4.0, the industrial internet, uses autonomous systems to detect errors, record supplies, and optimize production. Problem here again is we still have a complexity. We have a control logic, and they require an explainable autonomy. All the cost of failure is pretty high. In all of these use cases, at the very end of the day, we will need some kind of HMI. So the idea of no HMI is the best HMI will not work because there is no HMI. Let's have a look at, for example, the autonomous driving. There is first of all, I need to call the car. I need to say the car, hey, I am standing here at this junction and I want you to come here. You will use an app for this, but then you have suddenly an HMI. Although you want to drive an autonomous car, and you sit in the car, yeah, and then you want to tell the car where to go. You want to say, okay, I want to have a comfortable driving style. I want you to drive as fast as somewhere possible because I'm in a rush. Or you can have it emergency stop. Yeah? Or you want to have a bio break. How do you communicate that to a car? Or suddenly you start driving there and you want to tell the car, oh, sorry, I just received a call. I don't want to drive home. I need to drive to another client. Yeah, please change the destination. How do we do this? And there are solutions for this, but these solutions are HMIs, human machine interfaces. Same for autonomous trains. You will have a train control station. There will be a control center somewhere. And there are people sitting, there are humans sitting and controlling the entire traffic. And maybe it is just three or four people, a small team controlling the entire Shanghai or Paris or Berlin underground traffic. Yeah, but there are humans and they will need an HMI at the very end of the day. About 2-3 years ago in summertime, I was sitting in a beer garden in Berlin in my neighborhood there. And there were two startup founders at the same table. And we started talking and I said, yeah, we have an autonomous drone. We develop a fully autonomous drone for agricultural use cases. So if you're a farmer and then you have this drone and the drone flies over your fields, and if the drone finds out, oh, I need some additional chemicals here, I need some additional water there, then it can spray it out. Yeah, that was basic idea today. Okay, guys, who's doing your HMI? No, we don't need an HMI. Yeah, it's fully autonomous. I said, yes, but you need an HMI because you need to tell the drone what it shall do. Which field? What is the crop on the field? What shall it look for? Yeah. So what shall it do? You need to tell it. No, it's fully autonomous. I don't know whether they have understood until today that they need an HMI. For me, the result was no project, no business. With them, for them, probably the learning, the hard learning, that at the very end of the day, they will need an HMI at some place. So the popular phrase, no HMI is the best HMI, is maybe true, but this doesn't hold up. Autonomy doesn't remove the human. It just redefines the role that a human has in interaction with a machine. So humans become supervisors, not operators. Humans define goals. They don't give commands. They review the results, but they don't control every single move in there. But all this still requires human-machine interfaces. For goal definition, for trust building, to override options, monitoring, and access and communication. So we have this change in the paradigm of the human-machine interface if you have autonomous devices from control to context, from command to dialogue, and from surface to structure. This will have serious impacts on the HMI structures, on the way we design it, on how they look like. And at the end of the day, this is the new challenge for the HMI community. So the interface is no longer just a surface, it's a part of the system's autonomy. All right, some final thoughts on this episode. The future interaction is not a one-way interaction. In the body, on artificial organs, in the brain-computer interfaces, in autonomous systems, technology is increasingly penetrating human domains. And the more independent machines become, the more vital our role becomes as humans, as a meaning maker, as a decision maker, as trust builders. And at the end of the day, it's not about replacing humans. It's about integrating them into the technology, first of all, into the processes, and defining the responsibility. So we need more than sensors and algorithms. We need more than technology. We need a deep understanding of humans, of how we work, how we function, of our needs, fears, of our limits. And then technology becomes a real progress. All right, so three glimpses into the future, brain-computer interfaces, artificial limbs and artificial organs, and a new view on autonomy. We have these three technologies. They change human-machine interface. They change how we are related to machines. And my final decision is, my final takeaway is, HMIs remain relevant.
That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.